Imagine a situation where people are losing interest in what your organization does. However hard you try, the public seems to have moved on. What do you do? How about another question? Should your organization get involved in politics or not? It's a big topical issue at the moment. And as society gets more fragmented, how do you tailor a message to not just the different segments in your own country, but globally? We'll be discussing all these questions and more with my special guest co-host this week, TJ Ortega from Fearless, on this week's The Public Relations Podcast.
The Public Relations Podcast with Richard Minson.
Well, I hope you're having a very good week so far. That was certainly an interesting discussion at the end of last week's episode on the fact that PR has a bit of a PR problem when we were discussing that with Amanda Prossier from Lightspeed. PR. It's a phrase, this whole PR's got a PR problem that I've seen more and more recently. I don't know whether you have as well. Amanda is educating clients with her client training courses she was telling us about in the last episode, and also with that book that she's released, PR Confidential, which the whole goal of that was to try to demystify PR for the public. You know, she was saying last week, if you were hearing that one, she was saying how CMOs often come to her and say, well, I'm doing marketing. Why do I need PR? So there clearly is that issue. But what do you think should be done about this? You know, one of the ideas we talked about last week was whether PR people need to stop having PR conferences and focus just on going to general marketing conferences and organizing talks about what PR actually does. What are the benefits of it? You know, the fact that PR and marketing has become far more merged now is pretty obvious, but PR still has clear techniques that stand out that can add value to the whole marketing process. So what do we need to do? You know, we are PR and comms people. What do we need to do to get across to marketing folks, to the public as a whole, what PR can do? How can we get it across? The fact that, in my view, PR and the skill set of PR, the mindset of PR, is probably going to be one of the most essential skills in marketing in the years to come as we move into the AI era and also as society gets more fragmented. But what do you think? Let me know. I would love to know your thoughts. And of course, if you want to share them, I will get them on the show as well. But you can reach out to me privately or publicly on LinkedIn. You can find me at Richard Midson, M-I-D-S-O-N. So to this show this week, and I am absolutely delighted to introduce TJ Ortega onto the show for the first time this week. And I love getting on different perspectives from the PR world. And the thing I loved about TJ when he reached out to me originally, and it was an absolute no-brainer, I wanted to get him on, was the fact he's got such a diverse background. And a lot of this has come from the military, from defense, and he's also working in software. So it kind of gets a bit complex, but it adds so many perspectives. But TJ, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, how's it going, Rich? I really do appreciate
it. It is absolutely awesome.
You know what? I've been listening to you for a while, and the simple fact that I get to hear other people talk, and as you were just saying, give us that in perspective, I felt that was something I could do and to give back to you. But yes,
I really appreciate that. I mean, this is the whole point of the show. If we can prompt other people's ideas, you know, and help inspire people, that's all. I'm looking forward to what you've got today. But yeah, tell us more. Tell us more about you.
Yeah. So a little bit about me. Been working in the industry now for about 19 years. Believe it or not, started off in the U.S. Navy. I was a mass communication specialist where I was the guy taking photos of aircraft flying at me. And I decided that was a little
too dangerous. So you weren't Tom Cruise. You were the photographer of Tom Cruise, basically, right?
I was the one who made Tom Cruise look good. Absolutely.
I like it. And, that's a PR person.
Yes. Absolutely. And decided, you know, maybe it's time for me to get some education because I just joined right out of high school. And that took me to San Diego State, where I got my degree in communication. And I started working in the defense industry, doing public relations for them. But at the same time, I maintained my reserve Navy career, where I eventually got commissioned as a public affairs officer, where I still am, still doing that day to day, based out of a command in San Diego called Commander 3rd Fleet here, where I support them on 1 week a month, 2 weeks a year, which I absolutely adore to do. And I eventually found my niche in Department of Defense Public Affairs, helping them tell their story. And so I am currently with an organization called Fearless, which I started back in March. And let me just tell you, when you find people who love what they do, this is the company you want to work for.
Yeah.
I am now supporting an Air Force organization out of Montgomery, Alabama for them. And I'm still doing it out here in San Diego. I'm extremely excited for what I do and helping us tell the story and being transparent with the public. So
I've got to raise a quick point on this, because this is something someone asked me about a while back, about finding the right firm to work for. And sometimes you hear people that will say, I'm really struggling to pitch a story. I can't get decent stories out of these clients or my boss. And it's like, well, sometimes you've got to sack your boss and the client, because you've got to find people that you can communicate the story. If they can't give you what you need and they're not passionate about it, it's a bloody hard sell to try and get journalists or creators or influencers interested in it as well. And that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you talked about it a few weeks back. And one thing we were just saying, you know, PR professionals, we have a problem with not being able to communicate what we do and why we do it. And I think picking up the phone, being a person, I think you had a, you know, they told a story about how they had to actually pick up a phone.
Yeah, just call David. Yeah.
Yeah, David. A lot of people don't know how to do that nowadays. I will pick up and I will talk to a journalist. I don't care. I will tell him, hey, how's it going? How's the family? I seen on LinkedIn, you know, you just did this, or you know, on Twitter, you just posted a picture of a bird. I don't care. I'm going to figure out what it is and we're going to find something about it. I love communicating. But when I tell my boss, I believe it's a good idea we do this, I'm really hoping he's taking my consulting that, hey, we should probably do what TJ's saying, because this probably is going to help us out along the way, because I'm so passionate about it. And I think that's
you've got the passion, but they've got the passion. That's the key thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's because otherwise you just don't have the stories that you can pitch in the first place. If you're trying to make up something, you know, if you're trying to massage, God, I was going to use a phrase that we used to use in newsrooms, which I can't really use on this show. But if you're trying to massage something that is not particularly pleasant, shall we just say, you can interpret the word however you want to. And you just, there's only so much you can do. You've got to have something reasonable that you can work with, haven't you?
Exactly. I think it's coming to their level. And also helping them tell their stories the best as possible. You know, they know what they want to say. They know that they want to put it in front of XYZ customers or in front of some vendor. It's they do need that help. At the end. We all need help at the end of the day. I'm not perfect every day. I think, you know, but we do our best to become better every day, and that's all we can do. So we're there for them, absolutely. But I am thrilled to be on this show.
You're gonna give us so many ideas on this one. I have a feeling we might run way over on the show. So let's do our best to get on with it. Let's start off with then. So a few stories that we spotted around. TJ's got one as well. First one I spotted was Meta's marketing director has hinted that if you want to trend on Threads, you're going to need to start positive, happy conversations. Now, Meta seems to be focusing on trying to get positive engagement to differentiate itself from X, Twitter, whatever you want to currently call it, which, of course, has this perception, pretty warranted at times, of hosting quite heated debates. But if platforms are trying to force the type of conversations that are being had, could this present a challenge to organizations wanting to reach people? The problem, of course, is that, like it or not, and I know this from my career as a news editor, is that people, sadly, do generally want bad news, because it triggers us. It triggers dopamine in us. It triggers debate and disagreement. It makes us engage. It makes us want to join in those conversations. So if we're trying to start conversations, could this be a challenge? I mean, if we put it as bluntly, then are Threads basically trying to make it so that all you can do is put fluffy kitten videos on there? In which case, there are only so many fluffy kitten videos we can actually put on before we still get bought. In fact, I think that ran out about 20 years ago on Facebook, didn't it? The kitten videos. it's working exactly. But it does raise this interesting question, though, that if platforms try to control the message, are we going to be able to reach people? I mean, what was your take on that story? I've got a few thoughts, but interesting yours.
Yeah, you know, Threads being that new platform, that new hip thing that they're trying to kick off. And, you know, if you're an early adopter, you can become popular, you can become famous. Mm-hmm. But how do you do that? And you know, with them saying that if you want to get to the top and you want to be popular, you have to be happy and go lucky and do, you know, proper reposts. I think it's going to take it away from what it's supposed to be and what you want it to be. It's a weird new platform. I'm on it. I think just because I wanted to see what it was about. I haven't put my customer on it yet. I don't recommend it as a gist of yet. I'm still trying to learn it as well too. But what value will it add? I think that's what it's going to come down to. What value will it add to your life? What value will it add to your organization? Do you think of that?
That's my concern, because it's like, okay, Twitter, gosh, you could talk for absolutely hours about it, but it's like, what's the phrase they're saying at the moment? Is that free speech but not reach? So they're doing a controlling element as well. They're saying that, look, if you've got extremist views, you're welcome to say it, but no one may see it. But it just gets me that when you're doing PR and when you're trying to generate a conversation, there's only so much you can do with purely positive, happy stories. This is me thinking as a news editor.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what we're really trying to do here is turn something into what we're so used to Twitter, right? So they're trying to maybe, you know, in an essence, try to turn this thing into what a Twitter could have been. And Twitter is great too. I still use it. My audience is on there, and that's why I use it. I have an audience of defense public reporters who are on there, and they're constantly using it. They're retweeting, they're putting their stories out on there. And so that's where they live. That's where I need to live too. Are they living on Threads? I don't know if I necessarily need to be there. Now, on a personal note, I want to be there because I want to see where the conversation is. I want to know what's happening. So I think that
what people are actually saying, because I think there's a danger of this as well, is that you're going to get a skewed view, because if it's going to be too filtered, we're not going to know what people, you know, even if we don't agree with it, we're not going to know what they actually think, which is crucial to be able to communicate with them.
Exactly. You know, those things that drive the emotion, right? Because, I mean, if we're upset on a day, we're going to go on and we're going to post, I just had a horrible day. And anyone else had one? Vote on it, yes or no. Photos, here's my kids playing baseball, what have you. It's become its own living, breathing thing. And then if you're now trying to adopt this positive attitude, which I believe everyone should have positive attitude, but that's just me.
Yeah, we all want it to be. This is a problem though, like with all PR and comms, frankly, isn't it? Is that we want things to be a certain way. And yet the reality, when you look at the real, it's one of the things with AI, isn't it? Is that we're seeing some of the ugly side of humanity, but the problem is that's the reality. And if we're going to communicate with people, we have to understand the reality, not what we want to believe is the reality.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And the reality is what we're making of it. So AI, I love everything that's coming out of it right now. I'm fully enthralled in it. And I've been using, obviously, ChatGPT in different ways. How can it support me? How can it help me? Obviously, I think a lot of your guests have mentioned that, you know, you still need to tweak. You know, it can write the news release. It's going to do what it needs to for you. But it's also been helpful with the social media world too. I think, I need to do a social media post. Can you develop one for X, Y, and Z? How is that going to relate inside of Threads? And will it come off as positive? Likely it will, because a lot of what ChatGPT is doing is giving you that positiveness. So I'm trying to connect the two. But Threads being that product, I don't know if it's where organizations want to live or just let the people be where they want to be. But again, you're already getting the ads, so I don't know.
You know, that's a really interesting question. I wish I'd set up something beforehand, because it would have been interesting to try it right now, to pick a really negative story, put it into ChatGPT and say, can you turn this into a positive and see what it does? I'll have to try that. That'd be something I'll put out on LinkedIn after this show. I think that'd be an interesting.
You don't need ChatGPT. You need me. I can do that for you. I'm a PR professional. You give it to me. I'm not going to spin it, but I'm going to make it look good.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that I find ChatGPT will come up with terrible stuff, but it's a bit like you said about this whole show. It's often it will prompt you. It will just give you that, and it will open another door that taps into your experience as a PR comms pro that you can then draw out what would actually work. So I find that, I don't know, it'd be quite interesting that to sort of see what ChatGPT does and see how, whether you could actually use it or whether your client would fire you after you tried to use what it came up with.
If you're looking for how to do a positive post, pump it into ChatGPT. I think that's how we're going to get to the top of Threads. I think that story's telling us to do. So I think that will hopefully help Meta that way.
Well, let's move on. Next story. You saw one about the NBA, and you think they've got a bit of a problem with communicating this new series that they've got within the main series, so to speak. You're the NBA expert. I'm not. Tell us.
I wish I could say I'm the NBA expert, but
you are compared to me. What is it they always say, that the expert is the person that knows more than everyone else in the room at the time, isn't it?
Exactly. I really think, they've been, NBA, obviously, they have tons of games throughout the whole season. It's very similar to our Major League Baseball. You have tons of games going on. And they started this new in-season tournament. And if I don't have the actual answer, I usually reach out to my father and I'm like, what is this in-season tournament about? And he tried explaining to me, and unfortunately he didn't know very much about it either. And with as big as NBA is here in the States and as big as it is in the world, actually, and NBA growing, I believe this in-season tournament wasn't properly actually communicated to the general public. I just didn't see it. I didn't see enough about it. All of a sudden, one day you have your team who's playing in this tournament, that they're going to win something extra. They're going to get extra money if they win. But again, I don't fully understand how the teams were broken down. Who were they playing? Was it a division-based? There wasn't just enough information put out there. Now I'm not saying that it's a completely a PR problem, but I definitely think there was a miscommunication between their audience, who is a sports watcher like myself, who could have better understood. And again, I still question a lot of things, you know, these certain sports do. So,
but that's interesting, though, because even though you say you're not an NBA expert, you're someone that understands the principles of sports. And if you don't understand what it means, there's clearly a communication issue there. I mean, I think back to, exactly. I currently live in Australia, and there was this referendum about The Voice, which was about Aboriginal rights. And one of the biggest problems they had with this, whether you agree with it or not, was that people didn't really understand what it meant. It's a bit like with Brexit. When I was working in European politics, this was something I was heavily involved with. And it was really hard to explain something that complex. I mean, really hard. But it sounds like here you've got a fairly straightforward structure of how it's working, but it's just not got across. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I think that's something that, like, again, general sports watcher who should understand what's going on in this general tournament. And, you know, it honestly kind of turned me off. And in a way, I didn't, like, actually follow in very many games now, because I'm just like, well, let's just wait till we get to the regular NBA season, where I think everything else is happening, where I can watch my team, the Denver Nuggets, go them, to actually, you know, win another championship. So I think there was a bit of a miscommunication. I think it was a small miss. NBA still does a great job of marketing that organization and their teams, and especially the players, as much as possible. But again, for something so large, something with so much money behind it, I think there could have been a basic generic.
Yeah, so a bit of a miss on that. What's just happening. Explaining what it means, what's actually happening.
And they may have gotten a little bit more of a watch maybe on their, you know, their NBA app or what have you, on their NBA Plus app, so they can have more people watching it, better understand it. But again, it turned me off. I mean,
That's the problem. That's where it's all fall down. Final story we've got, according to a new report from Morning Consult, a majority of Americans in this case, I'm sure we're going to see a similar sort of thing in other countries, though, say brands should not take stands on social, corporate, or cultural issues. But a desire for companies to speak out is clearly rising, especially among younger generations. According to their research, 53% of respondents said corporations should not get involved in issues, but 30% said quite conclusively, yes, they should take a stand. Gen X apparently, as I say, wants more corporations to get involved in having a position, but it's still below 50%. I mean, you don't have to go far to see these kinds of debates going on all the time. I mean, Nike obviously had a difficult issue with their campaigns. And what was it? Bud Light, wasn't it?
Bud Light.
They were engaging Dylan Mulvaney.
Mulvaney.
Something like that. So, I mean, to me, this is the problem of companies still thinking that you come up with one message for everyone. They're not taking into account the fact of you've got such a polarized society now. You haven't just got 2-3 TV channels. You've got lots of people who are talking about different things. And I just feel that this is where companies need to think of tailoring the message more to each individual aspect. And that could, and it's not saying try to be two different people, because that's going to backfire on you, because someone's going to say you said this or said this to someone else. But the emphasis of the messaging on that different place, I think you need to be very clear about. Another thought I had when I was looking at this story as well, as you know, from the world of politics, which I was in, you know, one of the things you can do with the language in politics, obviously, is that the way that you use language can often mean different things to different people. And therefore, one message, one thing that you say can be interpreted in different ways by different groups of people and still feel like it's supporting that message. The other final aspect is also from politics, which is about the whole getting your advocates to pass on the message. This is the same as like with employees being your representatives as well. Is that when you've got lots of different people in your organization, employees are saying stuff, they can tailor messages to individual people and give their own particular take on things. So my main point here, I'm rambling on a bit with this, is that you need to acknowledge the fact that society is not just one message anymore. It's not just one group of people. What's your take, TJ?
You know, I'm fortunate that I work for an organization, Fearless, who has very, very strong and been very vocal about what they feel as a community when there are certain things that need to be spoken about. Black Lives Matter, LGBTQ, they're very vocal about it and what they feel. And the reason why I support them in this is because of their ethics within the company in itself. They have outlined that for us clearly on what exactly they are about. And it's part of the reason why I joined the order. Now, polarized, boom, let's jump over to the U.S. Navy, where I still support them, where I feel like they are still trying to get on board with a lot of the stuff of the diversity and inclusion. Many years, you can go back not even 20, 30 years, there was so much hate within this military Department of Defense that, certain people couldn't be on ships, women couldn't be on ships, certain colors couldn't be certain jobs. So I've seen it transform. And now I'm in an organization in the Navy where we celebrate Native Americans. We celebrate Black History Month. Everyone gets very much involved with it. And it starts at the top, right? It starts at what are our ethics and what does it mean? So, I'll not share anything, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting because what I kind of got from this report was the problem of the division of society. That when you come up with a message like Black Lives Matter or something like that, you're inevitably going to have, it's like going back to this AI point again, about some people are going to have views that we do not agree with, and yet they might still be our customers or our clients. So how do you make sure that the messaging that you're delivering doesn't upset a certain demographic?
I learned this early on, right? So I was, I worked for a company called Northrop Grumman, a large defense company here in San Diego and throughout the world. And I was working on this project, and it was a joint project with Canada. And I had to fly up to Toronto, and I had to meet with some media. And I put out a news release. And I was so excited about this aircraft that we were going to help them build. It was an amazing thing. And I just put it out in English. Little did I think put that out in French.
Yeah,
I didn't put it out in French. And the first PR guy who came up to me, he's like, he threw the news release at me. And he was like, why isn't this in French? Why isn't it just in English? He's like, we speak two different languages here.
Yeah.
And I was like, why didn't I think of that? And now it's about talking the language of who you're going to be speaking to. So again, if you're choosing a side, if you're going to be involved with the politics of the day and your company's going to talk about it, make sure you're talking the right language. Saying what you're saying is right.
That's really just... it's interesting what you said about the military, okay, and the fact that attitudes have changed so much over the years. And yet, by the nature of society, you will have people who are older, who will have lived in a different time and will have a different perspective. So how do you tailor that message now? I'm kind of hypothesizing here, but how do you tailor that message when you've got such opposing, potentially, views? I mean, how do you...
It is a tough one, especially because, again, I would consider myself a younger person still in the military, even though I've been in 19 years. I still there's still people who've been in 30 plus years, and things were done a certain way, and they still believe it should be done that way. I think it needs to change, and it just needs to change from the top, which we're starting to see. A lot of our higher authorities and leadership are starting to see the shift that, maybe we should have a diversity and inclusion officer who can tell us about, a certain month of why we're celebrating, Native American History Month or whatever month it may be that time, but to learn about it. So we all become more educated. We need to be educated and we need to be speaking the language.
It's translating that into messaging that the whole gamut of people will be able to appreciate and not feel sort of threatened or whatever it is that they feel.
And I think someone will always be offended. I don't think we can ever get away from not offending anyone. We're in a very...
You're not saying anything
area.
If you're offending someone, yeah.
Exactly. Again, I could post positive on Threads, but someone's going to find it negative. So it's just the times that we're living in. And we do our best. I think that's what it is we just do our best on the public affairs side of the House of the Navy is to do our best to tell that story. So and then my day-to-day job, I'm really there to take that technology piece and help out the Air Force at Bespin to be like, hey, you guys are doing some amazing stuff. Let's tell that story. And luckily enough, this Air Force organization called Bespin that I'm working for, their senior leadership, I call them senior leadership. They got a couple more grades than I do, but this senior leadership who understands it, they understand the mobile technology is important for the Department of Defense and for the Air Force as a whole to keep pushing the boundaries of what they're doing. And so I've been very fortunate in every job I've done. People allowed me to do what I need to do, allowed me to fail when I went to Canada and not put a news release in French when I should have. you know, it is a lesson learned. I think
we've all done it though. I still keep reminiscing about there was a particular situation in politics where I put out a press release, and even now I look back on it and I cringe, and I just span this thing so much that the first comment I got back from a journalist was, "I've never heard such spin before." And it's like, you know, and at the time I remember thinking to myself, oh, I did that quite well. And the response I got was, yeah, no, you're right. That stank, didn't it?
Cringeworthy moments. I think that's why people don't go when you see someone with their Facebook post from 15, 20 years ago, did I really just say that?
Exactly.
We all change and we all try to get better every day. But, you know,
You are listening to the Public Relations Podcast on all good podcast platforms. And also now, as you've seen, we're doing a bit of an experiment on YouTube as well. Most people are listening to the show, though, and you are very welcome to listen to this on podcast apps, just as you did in the past with the previous 5 series as well. But you're listening to me, Richard Midson, and the wonderful TJ Ortega, a communications manager at Fearless today. Still to come, we're going to be looking at what to do if people are losing interest in what you're doing, which is quite an interesting little case study we've got that's coming up. But first of all, I want to ask TJ about a campaign that he has been working on recently, something that he has found really interesting and innovative in what's going on, that he's learned stuff from. So what campaign have you got in mind, TJ?
You know, it's kind of a two topic one, right? So, get started with this organization, Fearless, back in March. I was super excited to join them. And they put me on a contract where I'm helping the Air Force tell their story to the Department of Defense on why mobile technology is so important to get a lot of things into applications so the everyday user can help use it. So telling...
Can you give us some example of what that is? Yeah.
Yeah. So this organization in itself, they have the brightest minds in the Air Force working on mobile applications that are going to help the other organizations like the Space Force, the Navy, build out applications that their service members could utilize at the fingers of the tip. I mean, I have my phone right here, right? They can actually pull up their service record. They can pull up something that they need, a medical record, right then and there. Helping families find daycares because the military is on bases. It's really difficult. So they're trying to find these little niches. But what I'm trying to do is open the aperture. And that's one of the communications campaigns I'm working on right now is how do we get out of the Air Force and get ourselves into the Space Force, to the Navy, to the Marine Corps? I want them to open the aperture. But then I want them to go bigger. Government, CDC, the FDA, I want them to go bigger. And so I'm helping with that. How can we go bigger? And it's groundwork. We're getting to trade shows. We're talking with people. We're at the Pentagon. We're doing the old school methods because you know what? The old school methods work for a reason. Yeah, and picking up the phone is still going to work to this day. So I am working on that day to day, and I'm just trying to help them tell that story. So we're kicking that off in the beginning of the calendar year, January 1. I have a content calendar being built out. I have a great communication specialist who's working with me, and she is hitting the ground running, old school methods.
So you've got a sort of 12-month plan initially. So you talked about going out and doing events. So when you looked at the people that you're trying to communicate with here, who are presumably sort of purchases within those departments, how did you assess that? And how did you sort of think, okay, well, this is the way we have to communicate? You could go and put a tweet, like we were saying earlier, and they might never read it. So how did you see what channels you need to communicate and what messaging you needed to use?
Okay, so I'm putting on my West Virginia University professor instructor cap here. It's all about target audience. It's all about your target audience. Who is that person? Who are we going to communicate to? I had them sit down a couple days ago. I'm like, I want to know who at the Pentagon needs to see our stuff. Who at this vendor partner needs to see our stuff? Because guess what? We're going to follow them on social media. We're going to figure out what time zone they're in. We're going to post social media around the time they're going to lunch. We're going to hit it hard. You know what I mean? So it's about breaking it down to the very minimal scale is who's your target audience and how can we talk to them as best as possible. So talking, getting down to the very bare bones of just communication strategy 101.
I mean, with these people as well, though, and I've been to these events where people are trying to pitch stuff at you all the time, millions of platforms. How do you stand out, though? I mean,
I love your story. It was a few episodes ago, and you said you went to a trade show, and everyone has their gizmos, their gadgets, these lights, these amazing things. But what is making it stand out? It was one sign that got you, right?
That's right.
That threw you off.
Yeah.
There wasn't a line of people, you know, you went up and you say, what's your story? Tell me, how can we help you tell your story? And that's what is really going to come down to. Yeah, I mean, we're going to be at Trade Show. We're going to be, you know, obviously having a booth. And really, honestly, is we're using it as an opportunity to get the leadership out there to have those important conversations with the people that they need to. So having those strategic conversations, not just going from booth to booth, but hey, this person has this technology, this vendor partner has this software service that could be used to help the Marine Corps. Let's bring them on board. Let's get the Marine Corps in the same room and let's get them talking. So I'm helping the middleman become a better middleman.
So is there a sort of core method? Because one of the things with this is it sounds like it's really big in scope. And all of the challenge with those sorts of projects is nailing it down to a message that someone's going to leave the room remembering, isn't it? So how are you?
Yes.
Although it sounds like you're also doing a lot of research just by the fact you're hitting the floor. You're trying to find out what those messages are that people need to hear. I mean, have you managed to sort of nail it down into something yet? I know it's very early days, so I might be putting you on the spot.
Yeah, so there's some good tactics, you know what I mean? Champion stories, obviously, are a great one. You know, who have we worked with already who can help tell our story with us? Are they going to be at the trade show with us? Let's walk with them over to this booth and we'll have a good conversation. Or even have them put out a news release with our name in it. We'll repost it on our social media. Let's figure out the basic way, picking up the phone. They have some really amazing applications, again, that they've already built out. So it's pretty easy to show, hey, this is what we've done. We've already done it. And let's just keep helping it grow.
Is it kind of ease of use? I don't know. I'm just interested because you've got such diverse, you know, what is that sort of core line? It's like, it sounds to me like it's tough to sort of say we can do everything because everyone says we can do everything. So it's like, it's homing it into that, isn't it? And I'm just curious as to what the kind of messaging these sorts of people within the defense and government sector need to hear.
It's the differentiator, right? So obviously, we're working in the defense world, so a lot of things are behind paywalls and firewalls.
Yeah.
Is a security piece. How secure can we get that application through it? Well, of course, you know, BESBIN has a way. And again, I don't know if I even explained what BESBIN is. So Business Enterprise Systems Product Innovation. That's why I just use the acronym. And trust me, in the military, it's all we use is acronyms. And I try to do my best to stop doing that. So this organization in the Air Force has that path, that pipeline of getting things through secure properly and the protocols done correctly. So that's the differentiator that we're making people know, is that we're making it easier things from product, from process to product in a matter of, you know, just a month, 2 months now. So I'm probably overselling them there, but I know for a fact that they will appreciate it, that they know that their organization can support anything that the Department of Defense has for them. Yeah.
That's another really interesting campaign, though, and to see kind of how it, I mean, this is one of the things with communications campaigns, isn't it? So they're always evolving. Well, more correctly, you fail when you don't evolve.
Exactly. And here's the evolve, right? So here's the evolve. This is where I am in one communication strategy, but I have another communication strategy for myself. And this is within Fearless, my parent company who I work for. Again, they're a major software company with a lot of engineers, technical people who do design, UX, and they do some amazing stuff. But they also have a need for communication specialists and marketing people like myself to join set campaign or contracts to actually help them tell their story as well too. Because again, we can send a group of engineers to go build X, Y, and Z for this contract, but who's going to know about it? Do they have a communication specialist who could talk about it? They don't know. So I'm trying to find more communication specialists who go on these contracts to help them tell that story. You know, we bring a special product, and that's telling stories for these organizations. So
I don't know how you find the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you were telling me earlier, I won't go into now because we're running out of time, but you were telling me earlier how you've just been coaching your son's baseball team as well. And it's like, where do you find the time? I don't know. Don't know how you do it. Well, let's move on because we are indeed running out of time. Just a reminder again that you are listening to the Public Relations Podcast. You can get the newsletter by going to thepublicrelationspodcast.com/subscribe. It is completely free. It's basically a collection of my thoughts of some of the key points that come out of each episode. Right. We'll talk about the community bag in a few moments' time. We've got a couple of questions in there. But first of all, the World Rally Championship has a problem. The motorsport, which was as popular as Formula One in the 1980s, is disappearing. And it's not the only once popular sport that is starting to fade away. The person who won the World Rally Championship twice over the past 2 years has decided not to participate full-time next year and wants to pursue other things like drifting, which has got high profile. But while you may not know rallying, it's a good example of how topics and activities and themes can fade, but also how PR could perhaps help to fix the problem. Because another sport which has seen a big decline is boxing. Yeah, well, the immediate thought from that might be that it's related to societal changes over people fighting. It leads to the question, well, why has boxing declined as mixed martial arts has soared in popularity then? If the issue isn't the sport, but the packaging, the branding, the messaging, and the conversations around it, then PR and comms should be able to help. You have to ask yourself why the most popular boxing matches now seem to be between YouTubers and not traditional athletes. So today we're going to do something just a little bit different. We're going to see if we can brainstorm a way to turn around the public image of a declining sport or an activity. So what sort of things can be done? I mean, I know, TJ, you don't have rallying particularly in your country, but you've got lots of sports. You've got lots of sports, though, which have kind of had their heyday, and activities which have had their heyday as well. And I think some of the core things come into this. So for me, for example, one of the things with rallying is that I saw when I went on to Reddit, I saw that the fans were talking about the experience. They were talking about the gloss, the feel, the excitement, the media rally, the interaction. And then when you go and look at the within the rallying community, it's all about getting the right regulations for the car, or, you know, making sure that we have the right standards for safety. And it's like, well, that stuff's important. It's missing the point of what the fans want. And I think this is one of the problems. You've got MMA where I knew I'd forget his name. The bald chap. What's his name?
Conor McGregor.
No. Sorry?
Conor McGregor.
No. The guy who runs it. I knew I'd forget it.
Oh, not Dana White. Dana White.
Yes, Dana White, right? Dana White came along and he knew what encapsulated the excitement for the fans. He's built a sport for the fans, not for the competitors, for the fans. And I think that's true with any kind of activity that is fading, is that it's lost the focus on what the fans want with it. So that's my first takeaway. What do you think on that?
I think we need a Netflix series. I'll tell you what, all these Netflix series on F1 and golfing and tennis, boy, oh boy, they get me excited. Yeah. It takes me back to the heyday of when the NFL did the Hard Knocks, the original Hard Knocks. And I watched that team go from, you know, barely guys to be able to pass and run to all of a sudden now they're championship contenders. And you're taking that story, they're telling story. And Netflix is doing an amazing job with that. And I'll plug them for that because the simple fact is, I barely watched F1 up until recently, but then I started watching the Netflix series, and oh, it came to Las Vegas here, and we were all excited. Americans, we were excited. F1's back, and it's going to be in Las Vegas, and then it was a kind of a PR nightmare.
Yes, but yeah, we won't go down that. Yeah, we'll leave that one for the moment. Yeah, but it was the story behind it that grabbed you, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think HBO still does some of the boxing series for. Certain fights that are coming up. I know Canelo is one of the larger fighters out there, and, you know, they follow him tremendously, and it's about telling the story. I think that's what they really need is where is their audience living, and do we need to make a Netflix series for them? Because I think that might help. So
I think that story aspect as well, because one of the things that struck me about MMA is they've had these various different series of kind of, are they called the Contender or something like that? But they basically have young upcoming athletes. And it's following the story, but it's not just going, it's not just the sort of boring side of training. It's the emotion. And I think that is missing from a lot of, one of my problems with boxing is that you just don't have the personalities like Tyson. Well, you never really had that many of them that work in a modern era. Yeah. You had people like Tyson, you had some sort of well-known people, but today people want to get inside your head. They want to feel the emotion and go on that journey with these people. And I think that's certainly missing, I think, in rallying. And I think in a lot of activities.
Exactly. You say rallying, and I'm like, wow, I haven't thought about that sport in a long time, and I forget. And with so many networks, you know, doing so many different things, all these different channels that people have an opportunity now. So it's also, you know, a networking thing too, because, you know, where can I watch this sport? Do I have to download an app? So, you know, their audiences are everywhere. It's vast. It's hard for them to get them the information that they're looking for. So it's really hard to get to your target audience, especially kind of in this sports age because of all these different applications. And but again, I think with the way they tell the stories, and again, I track boxing very much well too, because my father was a Golden Gloves trainer for many years. I had a cousin who was in Golden Gloves, and we watched a lot of major fights growing up as I grew up. But I definitely think that I think we're needing more of a storyline to tell about these fighters and what they're doing. These race car rally drivers, I didn't even know who that was, but I mean, I would have liked to have known. He's the best in the world. He won twice. Yeah. How could I not know? you know, yeah. So it's hard.
I think there's also, and this is no offense to the guy that won the World Rally Championship, but he's a young guy that is, I think, if you're going to put a label on him, he's quite ordinary, right? He comes across as ordinary. And I think when you look at the superstars, the people that motivate an audience and get you excited, they're beyond ordinary. You know, you're Conor McGregor's from MMA, okay? Yes, he's done some things which are a bit stupid. You know, some of the stuff, he's throwing the stuff at the buses and things like this. But the reality is stuff like that creates a story. It creates headlines. It gets people excited. And I think also it's like with football. You know, one of the things with soccer, I should call it, in Europe, is that it was seen as an aspirational sport. It was seen as a way of people getting out of a stereotypeness, but a sort of a humdrum working class life. And it was an opportunity to make your millions through your foot and kicking this ball around and being successful. And I think you need to have a bit of an aspirational story in there. Because if the top people just feel like they're just like me and you, what's there to get excited about?
Yeah, and I think they're trying to do that, you know, for the soccer world here. In on our side is there's a it's a series on, I think, FX or one of them, but we have two major stars who bought a team in the middle of nowhere in London, or I really don't.
Oh, yeah, Wrexham. So.
Wrexham. Yes, Wrexham.
Yes. And I didn't can't think of his damn name again. The actor.
I know. So
Ryan Reynolds?
Ryan something.
No.
It'll come to us later, right?
We mustn't do a pub quiz, TJ. We must not do a pub quiz. We're going to be terrible at this. But yeah, the Wrexham.
We're never going to be in it together.
Yeah, and they've completely transformed a team that no one had ever heard about using that star power.
Exactly. And San Diego, you know, we're well known for down here for a lot of soccer going on, and they're finally getting a major league soccer team here. So it's the buzz is starting to happen again. But, you know, it starts at the grassroots. Let's find our target audience. Let's pound them in and let's expand that aperture. And I think that's what.
And your story. Very much.
Have that story. You need that storyline.
Yeah. There was one other aspect that I thought was quite interesting here, and this is the environmental debate. And rallying has got a big criticism now of the fact, and if you don't know what rallying is, and perhaps this is the whole point, is that rallying is something that developed from the early days of motorsport. When cars first developed, and basically a car would go one at a time over a gravel road, a closed gravel road, and the person that drove over this road the fastest basically won. So these tend to be cars that look far more like normal road cars. And there's a big environmental argument now saying, well, okay, well, you know, we shouldn't be promoting cars. And yet you look at Formula One, and as you just said, TJ, there's a real excitement around that coming to America. So you have to then ask yourself, okay, well, what is the narrative difference in people's minds as to why Formula One is, in quotes, acceptable and rallying isn't? And the only thought I had on this was that it's because Formula One is so far out. It's almost like a fantasy. The cars do not look like what you ride on the road. And the drivers, again, going back to this aspect of aspirational, are like champagne swigging megastars on luxury yachts around the world. So because it feels separated from reality, it's almost like watching an action movie. We don't assume someone to go and do the kind of things that Arnold Schwarzenegger did. But yet when we watch the action movie, we love it. So I wonder if that is what helps to divert the messaging away from the argument that this is unenvironmental. I don't know. Any thoughts?
Yeah. So you say this environmental factor, right? So again, I live in San Diego, so I'm about 6-hour drive to Las Vegas, right? So we hear a lot about this F1 coming. My grandparents don't live too far from it. They live in Mesquite, Nevada, about an hour past Vegas. But they were complaining about the road work that was being done and how it was, you know, stopping certain things for, you know, deliveries and messing up the streets in Las Vegas. And my cousin, she just recently moved out of Las Vegas. And it almost like pulled people out of it because of the environmental factor. I mean, again, they had it and it was, you know, everything went great. I mean, except for the first day when they tried doing the practice runs. But it was a closed course, which I think it's what F1 does. And they do highlight these stars onto the next level, on, you know, as the champagne poppers living off yachts. When you don't hear about rally sports doing anything like that. Yeah, they're closing off roads and just causing issues for people because everyone's driving nowadays. Not, you know, and what did the store, you know, it's really started back in the day, you know, in the middle of Europe somewhere on some closed road, you know, like no one really drove that road, you know, probably some close horse and carriage. Now roads are important for people. And I think that's where the environmental factor comes in. It's stopping someone from doing their day-to-day, so they will put a dislike to it. They will take to the social media and bash it for what it is.
So the kind of answer as to how to solve this is first of all, you need a Netflix series. But you need to tell a good story.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get
just a Netflix series.
Yeah, TJ and Richard's pub quiz. That'll be an absolute disaster when you need a Netflix series. You need a good story. And you need to be able to, or my view was that you need to have an aspirational thing that people can dream about rather than the humdrum ordinary. Any other thoughts on what can be done to turn around a sport that's declining?
I think you need, you need to take the audience out of their normal day to day and show them that, hey, this sport is much more about the cars. It's about the people. It's about the individual we were just talking about, the emotion that comes out of it. So if there's a way they could tell that story, I think they should try to find it. That's my two cents.
Awesome thoughts. You're listening to the Public Relations Podcast with myself, Richard Midson. You can find me on LinkedIn if you search for Richard, M-I-D-S-O-N. And TJ Ortega, Communications Manager for Fearless. And just remind people how they can get hold of you, TJ.
You can reach me at Twitter at Ortega Defense. And I'm also on LinkedIn. And it's just an amazing opportunity to connect with people. So please reach out, follow, like, and I'll do the same.
Awesome. Right, we've got a couple of questions from the community. These are questions that people have posted to me, generally on LinkedIn, because one thing I have found with the PR world is that people don't really want to say things too publicly. So that is absolutely fine. I do not mind this. You can find me on LinkedIn, as I say, search for M-I-D-S-O-N. That's my name on there. And you're welcome to add these questions, and I will put them into the show. And if you've asked me a fairly specific question, which sometimes people do, then I fluff it out a bit to make it so that it's generic, so that it doesn't indicate who you are. And it can talk about the general strategies of it. So we've got two questions this week. And the first one, it says, how can you adjust PR campaigns to be tailored for global audiences without diluting the brand message? So it is a pretty big question, this one.
I got an easy answer right off the bat.
Oh, go for it, please, TJ, because I was just thinking to myself.
The language. I think I talked a little bit about it. My first news release that I was so excited with Northrop Grumman. I put out a news release in English, didn't even think about put it in French, and as I should have. And it backfired on me. So let's just start off with that. Speak the language.
Yeah, think about your core message, but then think about how they want to communicate, isn't it? It always is. And just trying to work out every single possible permutation of how they want to communicate as well.
Yeah, I didn't even think that, honestly. I didn't think they didn't even get to the message part because they didn't even see past the language part.
Yeah.
So, absolutely, the message is so important. You know, having that headline, grabbing the audience, what is it worth? What am I going to get out of by reading this inverted pyramid piece of paper? And what am I going to get out of it? So I think helping them tell the story, I think it's important, yeah.
Fantastic. The second question is, how do you get niche media outlets on board when you have a niche topic? Well, the answer to this is to deliver once again what they need. What are they talking about? What is the angle that they're interested in? If you go from my point of view, thinking as a news editor again, if you give me a generic story and I'm in some trade magazine about, I don't know, travel or something like that, and you give me some generic story which could apply to anyone, it's not going to jump out at me. You've got to tailor it to what I need. And then the other thing as well, a bit like TJ was saying earlier, is that reaching out to journalists, making a connection with them and showing that you understand an issue. Also, the another thing is don't just be pitching stories at journalists. Help them out. You know, we had on John Woodruff a while back from Two Tone in Amsterdam, and I love his whole approach to how he works with journalists. They're not journalists that he's pitching stories at. They're friends that he's talking to every day, having conversations about it. And that's the approach that I think you need to have, particularly in a niche area. And by having those strong relationships, you've got a much, much better chance of getting coverage.
Oh, and get the tattoos. Getting the tattoos. Yeah. I think of the two. Oh. Yeah. I love that episode. It's a good one.
Seriously.
I work in a niche area. You know, the Department of Defense, you know, the reporters who work in it, it's a close-knit group. The people who do and write the stories that help tell that story, you know, they're looking for their angle just as much as the next. One of the first things I learned from my first mentor when I started doing public relations in the defense field was, let's go meet the media. Let's go see who they are as a person and learn about them. We'd go to coffee shops. We went to lunches, and I knew who they were. And I built that relationship. I built that rapport where I was able to have the conversations, frankly, about things that were happening within my organization, where I was able to feed them, hey, this is a story that's upcoming. And I think your outlet would be perfect to tell the story. So I helped them tell that story, and I helped them build their credibility as a journalist, but also help build my own reputation within the organization as a communicator. And I think that that's where we all, you know, we're here to help each other. Let's just make it easier on everyone. So
yeah,
finding your niche, helpful. But be helpful.
Genuinely helpful. Don't just pitch a story at them. And also certainly don't start off with a bad story. Because if you, you're just going to label yourself as being useless from the start. You know, if
exclusives are good too.
Sorry?
Exclusives are good, are great too. Yeah. You want to give them an exclusive. Oh boy, let me tell you, you'll grab some ears.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've always got to be slightly careful with that. You're not going to upset anyone else. But in terms of getting that first connection, yeah, nothing better, is there? Awesome. Those are the questions for this week. I think we've been going on way too long, as always, because there's always so much to say. So the only option we've got is to get TJ back another time. You will come back, won't you?
Absolutely. So I'm here for you. I'm here to help with anyone's needs. Please, this has been amazing. You're doing a great job with this podcast, by the way. I think everyone's loving it. And we'll keep pushing it out to our small-knit group of people who really do care about public relations.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, it is, like we were saying before we even started recording today, I think the main thing for me on this show is that hopefully, even if we're not talking about a specific thing that is relates to what you're doing, hopefully it will help to trigger ideas on strategies you can apply to the techniques that you're working on every week. Let me thank TJ once again, Communications Manager at Fearless. Go on, TJ, just very quickly remind us where we can get hold of you.
Absolutely. You can find me at Twitter at Ortega Defense, or you can find me on LinkedIn by simply searching my name, and I look forward to connecting and following all of you.
Awesome. And of course, me, Richard Midson, MIDSO1 on LinkedIn as well. There's just a couple of things just to run. Oh, that's the wrong slide if you're watching on YouTube. But if you're listening on audio, you didn't notice that. There are three things I would just round up very quickly. If you're running a campaign, do let me know what you're up to and a little bit about it so that I can give you a plug in the show. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, as I said a little bit earlier. Number two, if you'd like to be a guest host on the show and want to introduce yourself to everyone, then head to thepublicrelationspodcast.com. You will see a link in the menu at the top there that says the word guest. It has all the details about how you can get involved in it. And as I just said there, talking to TJ, I want to get as many different perspectives on as we can. If you are an expert in influencers, then let's talk about politics. If you're an expert in politics, let's talk about influencers. Let's try and really shake things up and try and get new ideas on ways that we can approach comms. And finally, just a reminder that I'm still working on the PRology.com project. It will eventually get there. Just need to find some more time in my life to be able to do this. But it will come along as soon as it can. So you can always check that out at PRology.com. Whatever campaigns you are working on this week, have an absolutely awesome week. Keep me up to date with your successes and the things that you're learning as well. I'd love to hear from you. And I will speak to you very, very soon with the next episode.